The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from National Geographic. But before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to learn about Nature's Strange Hitchhiker. Now, that's the title of Sarah Gibbons' article in the April 2024 issue of National Geographic. Now, as the cover subhead reads, fungi are popping up in new places with unexpected consequences. Now, this journey covers a wide range of locations where we're going to learn more about the world of fungi and those who are exploring this still-to-be-understood world. Now, before I continue, I want to inject here that we're going to use the American pronunciation for F-U-N-G-I, which is fungi. The British is fungi or fungi, so just so you know. Now, Sarah Gibbons' article is one of several that explore how fungi have spread from continent to continent, sometimes simply by adhering to the sole of a traveler's foot. So are you ready for this journey? It's going to sound like science class, but I think you'll enjoy it. Now, Ann Pringle was surveying mushrooms at a field site in Tomales Bay State Park, just north of San Francisco, when she found herself in a predicament. She was surrounded by a sea of one of the world's most dangerous mushrooms, Amanita phalloides, commonly known as the death cap. "I wouldn't put my foot down without stepping on them," Pringle says. "It was just a valley of death, a total infestation." That was 20 years ago when Pringle, now a mycologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, she was doing research at the University of California, Berkeley. Despite its proliferation, there was a rumor that the deadly mushroom had not originated on the Golden Coast. 6 years and much DNA sequencing later, Pringle proved the rumor true. North America's death cap mushroom was an invader, a fungal species likely native to Europe. Now found thousands of miles outside that original range, death caps are the culprit behind most mushroom-related poisonings. Their powerful toxins start to attack the human body in as little as 6 hours after they're consumed, causing abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting that, if untreated, can result in fatal liver disease. Last August, three people in Australia died from ingesting death caps, victims of an alleged poisoning. The mushroom, about 5 inches tall with a greenish-yellow-white cap, can be easily mistaken as edible. In British Columbia, a child died after eating one in 2016. In Northern California, 14 people fell severely ill in 10 separate incidents during one particularly scary week in 2017. But death caps didn't evolve to kill people. These mushrooms are mycorrhizal fungi. Now, they spring up from a tangle of fungal threads that grow in soil and curl around tree roots, helping the trees take up nutrients. Now, this activity underfoot both intrigues and worries scientists like Pringle, who say we know too little about the fungal kingdom and what happens when these underground networks are rewired. Over the past century, our world has become more connected than ever, and fungi, like the death cap, have embarked on countless global journeys, hitching a ride on imported plants or simply wafting hundreds of miles in the wind. Now, climate change is allowing many of these organisms to thrive in ecosystems that were once too cold and dry. If history is any indication, we may not be ready for what's in store. In a sense, fungi are hidden earthly dimension that we only are now learning to see. They thrive in soil and grow edible stalks like plants, but many of their characteristics are distinctly unplant-like. Where plants have cell walls made of cellulose, fungi have chitin, a type of fiber also found in the exoskeletons of insects and crustaceans. And fungi are heterotrophs, capable of eating other organisms, often breaking down wood and dead plant matter by releasing and reabsorbing enzymes. Without fungi, dead plants and animals would pile up on the forest floors, and most trees would struggle to find the nutrients they need to survive. "They're probably closer to animals than you think," said Rayburn Simmons, the curator of fungi at Purdue University Herbaria. For more than a billion years, fungi have evolved to live in specific environments, sometimes in partnership with just one other species. But when a fungus has moved anywhere from dozens to thousands of miles away, these complex relationships can go haywire. It's a perfect storm with fungal pathogens, says Stephen Parnell, an epidemiologist at the University of Warwick, who models the spread of plant disease. Diverse strategies for reproduction help a fungus survive. Airborne spores from different species can intermingle in a new habitat, or the mushrooms might fuse together the threads that form their underground networks. But in a pinch, many can simply reproduce asexually. With climates and landscapes changing at record pace, says Parnell, these reproductive traits make fungi uniquely and worryingly adaptable. In new environments, foreign fungi can spread voraciously and remake the topography around them. American chestnut trees were once giants of Appalachia, growing 100 feet tall and 10 feet wide. In the early 20th century, however, the fungus, and this is Cryophanecaria parasicata, landed on American soil. In Japan and China, the fungus was only a nuisance to Asian chestnut trees, but for the American chestnut, it caused deep cankers that slowly choked the water and nutrients, and an estimated 4 billion trees died over the following century as a result. As the last great American chestnut trees withered, frogs and other amphibians faced a similar peril with a fungal pathogen known as a chytrid. Believed to have originated on the Korean peninsula, the fungus lived in harmony with local amphibians, but over the past 150 years, chytrid has spread around the globe and is now associated with the decline of at least 500 amphibian species. It's caused 90 species to disappear from their habitats, and it's been described as the worst wildlife disease in history. We're moving biological material across the world in a matter of hours, across continents that were long separated, says Ben Sheely, an ecologist at the Australian National University. We essentially have recreated dysfunctional Pangaea. Well, last autumn, Pringle and one of her students spent weeks collecting hundreds of deathcap mushrooms from golden-hued forests in the United Kingdom, Hungary, France, and Poland. These samples could help scientists better understand why deathcaps thrive in some ecosystems and don't in others. Researchers are looking for a predator or pathogen they can replicate to stop the mushrooms from invading forest floors, a method called biocontrol. But Pringle says one of the most effective ways to keep fungi in the right environment is prevention. Monitor imports of foreign species and then test them for fungi. When fungal diseases can't be prevented in an environment, treating them can become an immense undertaking. To restore the American chestnut, several scientists have been working on decades-long breeding projects, one of which involves a controversial genetically modified tree. While individual frogs can be cured of chytrid, eradicating the fungus in environments where it's introduced is nearly impossible. Last year, new research on how deathcaps produce their powerful toxin opened the door to a possible antidote. Some startups and nonprofits have promising solutions for helping fungi help us. Funga, a company in Austin, Texas, identifies native fungi that can assist trees in storing more carbon. SPUN, that's spelled S-P-U-N, a scientific research organization, is mapping the world's fungi to identify regional hotspots in need of conservation. At least 350 species are already at risk of going extinct, though the real figure is likely much higher. For Simmons at Purdue's Herbaria, winning the race against the biodiversity clock is critical for humanity and fungi alike. We're finding things that are beneficial to humanity in some way, whether it be the production of compounds like biofuels or compounds that are understood to have medicinal purposes. What's kept protected, he adds, may one day solve the next problem we might create. Well, the fungi cover story in the April 2024 issue of National Geographic is actually broken into several chapters, and time is not going to permit us to read all of them, but we'll read a lot of it. And I'm going to highlight some key points that are featured in Chapter 2. Now, this is really a comprehensive multi-page graphic with lots of drawings and timelines and so forth. It's called The Hidden Kingdom, and it was prepared by Jason Treat and Katie Weideman. And I'm going to just read a few of the captions for you just to give you some more insight about the fungal kingdom. Much more than just mushrooms, fungi are organisms more closely related to humans than to plants. Despite being reorganized as their own kingdom on the tree of life, only a small fraction of them are known to scientists. And the fungal family tree, sometimes beneficial, other times deadly. Fungi have shaped life on Earth for over a billion years. They're in the food we eat, the air we breathe, and more than 90% of plants need them for water and nutrients. Our understanding of these organisms is infinitesimal. Of at least 5 million species, only about 150,000 have been identified and classified in a family tree. So there's lots to explore there, right? And our final caption, called A Common Thread. The fungal kingdom encompasses seemingly endless forms, but nearly all its members have one or share one trait: cell walls made of chitin. Now, this solid but flexible substance also makes up exoskeletons and arthropods such as insects and shellfish. So, some unique things to learn there as we talk about fungus and fungi, so to speak. Now, also in this April 2024 issue of National Geographic, we're going to be looking at some different things. And the next one is The Fungus Within Us, and this is part of Chapter 3, and this is written by Landon Cook. 2 years ago, medical researchers taking a close look at cancer cells announced they had found a strange and surprising neighbor, fungi. But these fungi didn't just live near tumors. They offered clues about how deadly the cancer might be. Candida yeast, associated with colon cancer, were predictive of metastatic growth, while with gastrointestinal cancer, they correlated with poor survival rates. It's still too early to know if the fungi fuel the disease or if the disease is somehow incubating the fungi. But at the very least, these discoveries hint that there may be a new way to diagnose people earlier and better understand their prognosis. Initially, we were astounded, says Ilian Elif, an immunologist at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York and one of the researchers who made the fungi cancer connection. In addition to Candida, his team found several other fungal species that were associated with the disease, such as blastomyces in lung cancer and Malassezia, a variety of, or I should say Malassezia, tied to breast cancer. Now, part of that surprise for many might be because of another link between fungi and our health. Medicinal mushrooms are sold throughout the world in various forms, from tinctures and capsules to powders and teas. They sustain a $30 billion business that's expected to double by 2032, in part because of their cancer-fighting association. Even so, researchers are still at an early stage of understanding the true benefits of medicinal mushrooms. In 2022, scientists in India and Belgium published a comprehensive survey of peer-reviewed literature on the topic. While at least 32 species showed promise. According to the report, only around a dozen had been clinically tested for their potentially therapeutic properties. Mushrooms produce a wide range of chemicals not readily found in other organisms, says Walter Luton, a professor emeritus at the Belgian University Kluiven, who contributed to the report. Some of these naturally derived compounds interact with the immune system, as the report notes, and they exhibit potent anti-tumor activity, meaning they might slow the growth of certain cancers or even keep them from forming. Species such as reishi, and this is known as Ganderma lucidum, and maitake is Grifola frondosa, just to name two, and they've been shown promise in clinical studies. Now, though mushrooms are vastly understudied, Luton and his team call them one of the best gifts of nature for new pharmaceuticals, if we can better understand them, he adds. Now, this is the paradox of medicinal fungi. It's a mysterious realm that could help or hurt us. Understanding the difference and how to best harness what we're learning hinges on exploring a broader frontier called the mycobiome. Now, your body is certainly no stranger to good or bad fungi. The yeast in your stomach that helps regulate digestion, that's a good thing. The fungal infection on your skin that causes athlete foots, not so much. Among the trillions of tiny microbes that live on or inside each of us in a delicate balance, there are bacteria, viruses, and single-celled protozoans, all of which are part of what's known as your microbiome. Fungi are also included in the universe, but in recent years, researchers have assigned them in a separate designation to the microbiome in a recognition that these organisms work quite differently. Sun Yang, a director of the Microbiota One Center at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, says our body's fungal community is a small but crucial component of the gastrointestinal microbiome in particular. But while gut fungi such as Candida, Saccharomyces, and Cladosporium are all fundamental to our health, they also have been linked to diseases. Candida, for instance, can overpopulate and cause dysbiosis, or a disorder associated with many health issues that includes colorectal cancer. In other words, good fungi can become too successful and run amok and turn into bad fungi. For Deepak Saxena, a microbiologist at New York University, the life-altering question is simple. Why do some fungi inhabit tumors? Saxena's research by group was the first to identify fungi in pancreatic cancer, finding in 2019 that Malassezia yeast can migrate from the small intestine to the pancreas and inhabit cancer cells. Saxena hypothesizes that the fungi's presence in the pancreas might be because of either immunosuppression or some other kind of altered environment that tumors help create. In lab experiments with mice, Saxena has seen the use of antifungal treatments arrest tumor progression, although plenty of research has shown that what works in mice often isn't directly transferable to humans. For mushroom experts, it's not as simple as using one thing to treat another either. Ng says that traditional varietals like reishi and turkey trail, which is Trimetis verisimilar, have immune-boosting properties that have been shown to enhance the efficacy of chemotherapy. Numerous studies also indicate that many mushrooms species do, in fact, contain anti-cancer compounds, including biologically active carbohydrates and terpenes that stimulate the immune system. Still, there are questions about what dose is most effective and whether any of these would work as a standalone treatment. In the meantime, there are no mushroom-based cancer drugs or immunity boosters on the market today that have been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. That makes any mushroom-related remedy sold over-the-counter with health claims essentially try at your own risk. For some people, however, that seemingly untapped potential has led them to seek another kind of guidance. On an overcast day this past October near Port Angeles, Washington, Robert Rogers tromped through a shady wooded area followed by a dozen intrepid foragers who had signed up for his specially guided tour as part of the annual Olympic Peninsula Fungi Festival. He pointed to a fan-shaped fungus the size of a half dollar growing on a decayed nurse log. Its earthen-hued bands resembled the plumage of a game bird. "This is what turkey trail looks like in the wild," he told the crowd. Rogers isn't a doctor. He's a self-described clinical herbalist and the author of The Fungal Pharmacy, a field guide to identifying mushrooms and lichens with purported health benefits. And he's one of many ad hoc enthusiasts who have compiled research about incorporating fungi into everyday health routines, often as a preventive measure. Most commonly consumed mushrooms, even the ubiquitous grocery store button, have phytonutrients beneficial to our health. When it comes to cancer, however, medicinal fungi, such as turkey trail, are not exactly assassins. They don't kill cancer cells on sight, he explains. They encourage the immune system to do the job. More specifically, Ng says turkey trail has been known to increase the production of cytokines, which aid the body's cellular response to fighting a foreign pathogen. And I should say that cytokines is the correct pronunciation, which aid the body's cellular response to fighting a foreign pathogen or tumor. Used traditionally for centuries, a chemical from the mushroom has been the focus of more than four dozen clinical trials to date. As for the connection between fungi and cancer cells, Eliev concedes that he initially considered it to be biologically improbable, but he's since shifted toward cautious optimism about unraveling more mysteries of the microbiome. In another recent study, researchers at NYU, that's New York University, including Saxena, found that there are 20 distinct types of fungi that may someday be useful in distinguishing between people with cancer and those without, pushing toward the idea that early testing of fungi might pave the way for better diagnosis and treatment. Compare the potential advances of medicinal fungi to the advent of penicillin, one of the great fungi-based infection fighters of the modern age. It was discovered accidentally nearly a century ago after a physician let mold grow in the petri dish Staphylococcus bacteria. Who knows what other connections we might now find if we just start looking. So there you go. Well, we have a couple of things here to add. One is called Shroom Science Simplified. This is a brief sidebar that's included with Chapter 3, which we read. And it says, the granddaughter of a licensed traditional herbal doctor, Ophelia Chong, began cultivating fungi in Los Angeles 9 years ago. Now, she injects live mushroom tissue into a liquid culture of water mixed with honey, dextrose, or malt extract. Noted parenthetically, sugar feeds the developing fungi. Then it goes on, after several weeks of a magnetic stir plate, the resulting mix is moved to a bag of grain, then soil, where it will eventually produce mushrooms for personal, medicinal, and culinary use. Kind of your own personal pharmacy there, huh? Okay. Well, we're going to read another sidebar, and this one is called The Forgotten Detective. And I'm going to have to turn back, so just give me a moment to find the right page for you. And this is written by Dina Fine Marin and included in Chapter 1 of Nature's Strange Hitchhiker, which we started this series with. And again, this is from the April 2024 issue of National Geographic. And the subhead reads, now a pioneer of modern mycology shaped the U.S. response to potentially devastating plant diseases. The National Cherry Blossom Festival in Washington, D.C. has been a source of pride and tourism dollars for nearly a century. But when Japan's original gift of 2,000 cherry trees arrived in the United States as a gesture of friendship in late 1909, that future seemed far from bright. The trees were riddled with insects and several had ring-shaped dead spots on their bark, often a symptom of a contagious fungal disease. After inspecting the consignment, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's mycologist in charge, Flora Patterson, filed a curt letter to her superiors. She identified the fungus as a type of pestilosia, but she wrote it was impossible to decide with the limited time available if the species was already indigenous to the U.S. In academic parlance, she and her team were sounding the alarm. Now, after a flurry of diplomatic letters to Tokyo, President William Howard Taft approved the tree's destruction on January 28, 1910, and the shipment was set ablaze on the National Mall. Now, this was a radical move, but by the early 1900s, fungi stowaways had already led to an outbreak of chestnut blight, which we've discussed, and this would wipe out many existing U.S. forests. Shortly before the cherry trees arrived, Patterson and several of her employees had been tasked with investigating the other import threats and found a potato wart fungus that could have severely damaged the food supply. Patterson's fungal detective work helped encourage Congress to pass the Plant Quarantine Act of 1912, which mandated that all U.S. ports inspect and detain suspicious plants. The law opened up her access to new samples. Over the course of her career, she would bolster the burgeoning national fungus collections with more than 90,000 new specimens for study. Japan also eventually sent replacement cherry trees. It's thanks to people like Flora who had the foresight to know we should collect and preserve them that we are able to go back in time and see what a predominant disease-causing fungus was back then, says Lisa Castleberry, the current USDA director of the collections, which are located in Beltsville, Maryland. Today, that cache makes up the world's largest fully searchable fungus database with roughly 1 million samples, and much of Patterson's work is still part of it. Individual specimens and their carefully dried plant's host are stored in envelopes on stiff paper alongside detailed handwritten notes from Patterson and other scientists. It's an intersection of natural history and other history, the history of the specimen, Castleberry says. Scientists can now compare collection samples against suspicious spots, growths, or discolored plants to high-speed identification. When Patterson held Castleberry's job a century ago, her day-to-day task varied. Fungal enthusiasts often showed up to the USDA's office to ask for help identifying mushrooms they'd foraged. During World War I, Patterson furthered that work, co-authoring USDA guide to teach the public which backyard mushrooms could be eaten. Her team also identified several new plant diseases and conducted experiments to fumigate emerging pathogens. described in a 1914 newspaper article as the shield between the American farmer and the plant disease germs of Europe, Patterson was unlike many of the women in her era because her work was well documented. Female scientists at the USDA were allowed to publish under their own name, according to research by Western Connecticut State University fungal ecologist Hannah Reynolds. Yet Patterson's most lasting mark remains largely unseen. Fungal hitchhikers are now routinely detected and quarantined or destroyed at ports and airports due partly to the protocol she helped enact. No public bonfires required. So next time you try to take a plant from an overseas trip, now you know why they stop you at the border. Yep. All right. We're going to conclude today by just reading a part of Chapter 4. This is The Growing Future of Fashion, written by Jerry Nathan. His subhead explains, in the world of mycotextiles, cultivation becomes culture one handbag at a time. In present-day Romania, a dwindling number of artisans practice what's thought to be centuries-old craft. They search the forest for hoof fungus, which grows within trees and sends out shelf-like mushrooms a few inches wide. The fungus is pried off trunks and with a sickle shaved lengthwise into thin strips the color of gingerbread. Those strips are then hammered and stretched to form broad, felt-like sheets called amadou, which can be crafted into hats, bags, jewelry, and ornaments. These products are beautiful and eco-friendly, if painstakingly to forage and for and create. As far back as 1903, Lingit artisans is what the state of Alaska were crafting pouches out of sturdy, mat-like material. A 2021 study in the Journal of Mycology suggests that these mats were produced by Araucan fungus, a hardy polyspore native to old-growth forest in the Pacific Northwest. But again, artisans' process was about foraging for materials, not really cultivating them for mass production. Today, inside a 136,000-square-foot facility in Union, South Carolina, the biotechnology company MycoWorks is pioneering a more intentional and scalable approach. Beneath dim red lighting that resembles a dark room, stacks of metal trays are arranged in tall columns. Large mechanical arms whirl about, ready to pluck them individually for close inspection by a team of technicians who wear sterile suits and examine the contents with flashlights. Each tray is an incubating mycelium, a mesh of fine filaments that for fungi are roughly analogous to a plant's root system. The mycelium is a structural marvel, simultaneously soft, dense, and strong, makes a great potential replacement for leather. Coaxing mycelium to grow in predictable ways may be a complex task, but recent advances in biotech have opened up a cottage industry for mycotextiles. And the early efforts appear to be more ethical, environmentally sustainable, and efficient, with the multi-billion-dollar industry that is known today compared to animal leather. And MycoWorks is just one of a wave of innovators, all of which are betting, that a better understanding of mycelium can redefine the limits of fashion and design. And that, my friends, brings us to the close of today's journey. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you've learned a thing or two about the fungi world. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and look forward to having you join us again next week. I remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. And if you have questions or comments, please direct them to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.